G'day, beloved listeners. Welcome to another week of the Little Wireless program, which I'm afraid has to begin with me making a personal apology because I've been caught out in a power grab. A month or so ago, I made a secret trip to Canberra where the Governor-General swore me in as the next presenter of both Q&A and 7:30. And to my astonishment, who did I bump into? But the Prime Minister was also making a power grab by being sworn in a number of portfolios, and we did a deal. He promised he wouldn't tell Stan or Sarah if I didn't tell his front bench, but I think it's leaked, and perhaps Laura Tingle will tell us what's been going on. And, my dear, you have been greatly missed.
Oh, thank you, Philip. I've greatly missed you and the potties and all of those people.
I think you're on to my story, aren't you, about my secret visit to your alumna?
Yeah, you're an outrage, Philip. That's all I can say. Just, you know, power, power, power. Just grab, grab, grab.
Greed, greed, greed. Now, what the hell was he thinking about?
Well, this is actually one of those one of those points in time where quite a lot of people who never shut up are actually left a bit speechless, I think, Philip. Scott Morrison's move to get himself, appointed to a number of ministries. We know of three in addition to his own. That's health, resources and finance, but I'm reliably told that there are at least another two that we're about to hear about.
You're kidding. Wow.
Would I kid about something like that, Philip?
And not all at the same time.
Not all at the same time. Now, one can construct a view of how this happened. It started with the health portfolio and a rationale that in those deep, dark days of the pandemic, and in fact, on that day when they closed the borders and announced all sorts of really, you know, drastic measures because the world seemed to be going mad in March 2020, he got himself, they're saying he didn't get himself sworn in, but he got himself appointed as a health minister alongside Greg Hunt on the basis that what if Greg Hunt was suddenly knocked down by COVID? Given that the Minister for Health is the only person who can sign those sorts of biosecurity declarations like closing the country, you needed to have somebody else in place. Now, some people would dispute whether you actually needed to be sworn in as Health Minister to do that, but that was what he did. And having done that, he subsequently, and I forget exactly when or whether we actually know, when he got sworn in as Finance Minister as well. And then in 2021, got sworn in as Resources Minister, which actually started to rather change the story, I think, because that went from being a real necessity issue to being one about, it seems, about controlling things. And I'm told that there's a lot of work going on to find out exactly what the former Prime Minister did sign up to and what decisions he made in that joint capacity, because apart from anything else, Philip, I would think that any decision that was taken during that period of time by the former Prime Minister acting in one of these other portfolios or by that minister could possibly be subject now to legal challenge if somebody was aggrieved by the decision.
Did the ministers know what was happening?
Well, Greg Hunt apparently did know. Matthias Cormann, the former finance minister, didn't know. It'd be interesting to know whether his successor, Simon Birmingham, knew. The Nats certainly didn't seem to know that the resources portfolio had an extra resources minister. Keith Pitt, who was the resources minister, found out about it some time later, there was a contentious decision about a gas exploration permit off the coast of New South Wales, which Keith Pitt wanted to see extended and which a lot of the local Liberal MPs wanted to see stopped. Scott Morrison announced shortly before the election that it was going to be stopped. In his press conference, he talked about doing that as Prime Minister, but legally the only person who could do that is the Resources Minister, just like the Foreign Investment Review Board, any foreign investment review decisions can only be taken by the Treasurer and cannot be influenced by anybody else in the government, just like Immigration Minister's decisions can only be made by the Immigration Minister, for example, the Bilawila family. They can't be dictated by the Prime Minister.
Look, I feel a great sense of relief knowing that the former Attorney General, Christian Porter, gave advice that this was all perfectly legal.
Well, that's right, and that's I'm glad that you're relieved about that, Philip. But there are so many questions here. I mean, where do you start? But for example, one of them is, as far as I can see, however this process took place, what's known as executive council would have had to have been sitting or meeting, whether that was virtually or not. That's a group of senior ministers meeting with the Governor General when he was making signing off on various legislation or decisions. That suggests that somebody other than Scott Morrison, who was a cabinet minister, needed to know that this was happening. Now, everybody, including Peter Dutton, has said that they didn't know about this. Christian Porter apparently did know since he gave the original advice. Whether he was subsequently involved is sort of an interesting question, but also it implicates the public service. Was the public service having to act on decisions, say, for example, I, Scott Morrison, Health Minister, am making this decision, you know, whatever that portfolio might have been, what did they think was going on? We just don't know enough about it, but, you know, it's potentially a massive story, because not only is it a reflection back on what is increasingly looking like a fairly weird government in very many ways, it's something that nobody has ever contemplated before and is potentially a loophole in the way our accountability systems work in the future.
I see the Governor-General's felt necessary to have someone say it was perfectly legal as well.
And normal, Philip. Absolutely normal.
Forgotten. Normal, yes.
Yeah, so we're still trying to clarify whether he was saying that it was normal, because this has actually happened a lot of times before and nobody's mentioned it before.
No, this is the new normal, Laura.
The new, oh, right. Or the old new normal. Yeah. Or is that the new old normal?
Oh, heavens above. Yeah. So the argument now, and you raise this on 7:30, which I was going to take over, in, as you know, in my power grab, you make the point that it exposes the Commonwealth legally thither and yawn.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and as I said before, it's about, the gas exploration matter that I mentioned, where there was a difference of opinion between Keith Pitt and Scott Morrison. That's already in the courts being challenged as a decision. So I can't confirm this, but somebody was telling me tonight that there's, that action may now be sort of reconstituted because of this revelation. And as I said, any aggrieved party who was subject to a decision subject to a ministerial decision in a portfolio where Scott Morrison had these powers, now has reason to say, well, hang on, who actually made this? Who made the decision? And of course, there are all these other questions, like if as in the case of the gas exploration decision, you know, the two ministers have differing positions, who's got the upper hand, shall we say, because there's nothing to say that it should be the Prime Minister. So absolutely extraordinary stuff, and I think the accountability issue is so fundamental. I mean, we all regard it as all pretty, you know, passé that ministers should be accountable, but the idea is you get sworn in as a minister to be accountable for a part of the machinery of government, and suddenly you have this situation where we're not sure who's accountable for which bits of the government.
Double the pleasure, double the fun. I reckon it's fantastic. Now, there's a forthcoming jobs summit, and this throws up an interesting scenario. The leader of only one significant party will not be there. Little Proud will be there, Adam Bandt. but not Peter Dutton.
No, not Peter Dutton. And I mean, it's been a while since we've talked, Philip, but I mean, trying to just work out Peter Dutton's political play and, you know, on a wide range of fronts is, I've got to say, a little bit mystifying. On some fronts, he's being quite cooperative and bipartisan. For example, on foreign policy, he's being after a sort of a slightly militant start on the issue of The Voice, he seems to be saying, well, look, you know, I'm keeping an open mind, I'll hear what they have to say, but I'm dubious, all those sorts of things. But on the jobs summit, it's very hard to believe that he hasn't played himself out, just as he did on the emissions reduction target, by saying, no, well, we're not going to go along. It's not just about being there, Philip, I think, at the moment. It's either about looking like you're, you know, open to the new style of politics, shall we say, or trying to firmly say that you're not going to play because it's a style of politics established by the other side of politics. And I just think it's all very fine to sort of keep to your side of the playground at play lunch, but if it means that you don't actually get to play ball, oh God, this metaphor is getting wildly out of control. Sorry, you end up being pretty lonely, I think.
While you were away, one of your stunt doubles was Bernard Keane, who is at the moment being threatened with a huge legal action by none other than Lachlan Murdoch for daring to suggest that that Lachlan and Rupert might have had something to do with the with Trump's insurrection. Have you had a second to think about that?
Well, look, no, I haven't. But it does seem pretty extraordinary that Lachlan Murdoch would be that worried about, you know, a online news service in Australia, really. But
it's interesting, isn't it? It's the first time we've seen Murdoch, showing much concern about criticism.
It may,
in fact, augur well for the future.
Well, I suppose my observation, Philip, would be that they are sensitive to criticism and, and they do like to prevail in an argument, but they've got so many vehicles for doing that. And the usual mechanism, and I'm not saying this about Lachlan Murdoch in particular, but about the Murdoch empire, is that they just bully people hopefully into submission, or they certainly, misrepresent them, reduce their reputations so that they don't necessarily have to actually take legal action against them.
Now, we've only got a couple of minutes left, literally, but Four Corners, which I haven't seen, was looking at the new independents who may or may not change Parliament. You think that they will, and for the better. Did you get a chance to have a look?
I did have a look, and it was sort of endearingly honest about, you know, how they were just getting around the first few days of being parliamentarians and, you know, admitting to mistakes. And Jackie Lambie was as splendid as always, you know, being outraged about staff. But I thought it was a really interesting, a really candid view of what it was like for people who've never been in the parliament to be there for the first time and actually have to sort of work out how it worked. I thought it was an interesting look into it. I mean, it would have been great to have a bit more about the climate legislation, but deadlines were obviously against them. But really interesting insight into some of those people.
Wonderful to have you back, Laura Tingle, Chief Political Correspondent, 7:30.
It's easier than ever to hear your favourite local and national ABC radio stations, live and on demand, on the ABC Listen app.